All of the newest episodes of Note to Self are now available on the Luminary podcast app. It's free to download, and you can also listen to other podcasts from WNYC studios like Radiolab, Two Dope Queens, Snap Judgment, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, and others. Luminary Premium is the only place where you can enjoy the entire new season of Note to Self, plus new original podcasts you won't find anywhere else, from Trevor Noah, Roxane Gay, Guy Raz, Lena Dunham, and many more. And you can enjoy them ad-free. Start your free trial by going to luminary.link/note to self or download the Luminary app for free.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is New Tech City, WNYC's weekly look at how technology is changing the way New Yorkers live. I'm Anoush Zomorodi. MOOC, MOOC, MOOC. No, I haven't lost my mind. It's an acronym that I've been hearing everywhere, and it stands for Massive Open Online Courses. Millions of people around the world are signing up to take free university-level classes on the internet. But what I want to know if that means I can stop contributing to my kids' 529 college savings plan, and is this the end of those expensive four-year degrees? Nicholas Carr is a technology writer and the author of The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains, and he joins me now. Nick, thanks for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Nick, you know, online courses aren't new. What makes a MOOC different?
Well, there are a couple of things. One is the sheer size of it. This is the first time you've been able to enroll thousands, tens of thousands, even 100,000 students at once in a single course, and they tend to be more sophisticated than the online courses we've had before, simply because it's now easier to distribute rich multimedia through the web and to have interactive exercises and quizzes.
So how are they making money? Because free is the word that always stands out to people.
They're not making money, at least not yet. And this is one of the big questions that hangs over the whole movement. There are some ideas out there for how they make money. Some of them are acting as employment agencies and are charging companies to get access to their students. Others are beginning to charge for what they call credentials, certificates that say you've officially passed a course. But up till now, most MOOCs have been subsidized by either by venture capitalists or by universities themselves.
Have you taken a MOOC?
I've signed up for two and have taken a couple of
lessons. And what happened, Nick?
I watched a couple of lectures and then kind of tuned out, which seems to be a fairly normal response since the dropout rate of MOOCs up till now is about 90 or 95%. So at least I have some company in my failure.
Yeah, you recently wrote actually that of the 160,000 students who signed up for one artificial intelligence class, only 14% finished it. So what's the problem here?
There's a real question whether a computerized class can keep students engaged and attentive and focused on their work over the course of a few weeks or even a month or two.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I wonder is going to a class, there's the human touch, it's the eye contact you have with your teacher, it's also the social skills, especially for, you know, that 18 to 22-year-old bracket. They definitely need those things.
I think the whole social aspect and the face-to-face aspect of college courses isn't given enough credit by some of the promoters of MOOCs and even the architects of MOOCs. And it certainly seems like these online classes are pretty good at replicating the experience of taking a certain kinds of classes, computer science classes, mathematics classes. It's an open question whether what you lose in terms of a good classroom is going to restrict MOOCs to a fairly narrow set of courses and instruction.
So at the end of the day, is this going to be the college of the future?
I don't think it's going to be the college of the future. I think it's going to play an important role in expanding the reach of colleges and university professors. But the people who say that this is a better form of education than a college class are mistaken.
Nicholas Carr is a technology writer. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So you've heard of investors putting money into companies, but what if they could invest in people, specifically young people, without the cash to launch their own careers? Would you be willing to give a cut of your future salary to someone who invested in you today? WNYC's Ilya Meritz reports on a new startup doing just that here in New York.
Hey, I got a deal for you. Think of some life project you want to do. Dream big. Let's say it's directing movies. Awesome. And since you have no experience, let's say you want to learn the craft at NYU Film School. Well, tuition is $46,000. I'm guessing you don't have the cash on hand. No? Okay, so here's that deal. A handful of wealthy backers are willing to place a bet on you. They'll give you the cash you need. All you have to do is pay them 5% of your income every year for the next 10 years. That's the idea behind the New York City startup called Pave.
When you're young, you have initiative, you have energy, you have ideas, you have talent, but you don't have resources.
Sal Lahoud is Pave's co-founder.
So it's about connecting those two stages of life between an accomplished backer and a young prospect for the mutual benefit of both.
Notice how he says backer instead of lender and prospect instead of borrower. The investors who put their money into the Pave program have no guarantee they'll make a profit. They could even lose money. But if the young person they invest in becomes the next Jerry Bruckheimer, the backers could get rich, collecting a percentage of their prospects' earnings over the course of a decade.
I think it's important that young journalists go abroad.
Terrence Ross wants to be a foreign correspondent. He's a junior at Baruch College, and he just signed papers to receive $20,000 from a group of backers. With that cash, he plans to travel to Kenya.
The way I will see Africa is different from someone who's much older and who saw Africa through the last couple of years will see it. To be able to do this now is exciting.
But I wondered, even if Ross finds work as a journalist, he could draw a pretty modest salary. Having to fork over a percentage of his income could force him into a diet of ramen noodles. And the contract he signed means he's legally bound to pay for the next decade of his life. So what makes this different from indentured servitude? I put that question to co-founder Sal Lahoud.
I actually think it's the opposite, in the sense that you are giving young people, you're empowering them with the financial freedom to basically pursue their passions. I think loans, on the other hand, dictate choices because you know you have to start paying in 6 months. You know that whatever you're paying is fixed, and whether you earn or not, you're going to pay that amount.
So far, 8 people have raised between $3,000 and $50,000 each, and Pave is looking for more prospects. Just don't call them borrowers. For WNYC, I'm Ilya Meritz.
Cornell NYC Tech is officially open, and yesterday the first group of students, 8 of them, started their beta degree program, which has a special course on Fridays called Entrepreneurial Life.
We have people from a number of companies, nonprofits, others in the New York area coming in and running workshops with our students.
That's the school's founding dean, Dan Huttenlocher. Listen to my interview with him on our website, wnyc.org/tech. And as always, download us for free from iTunes and talk to us on Twitter at New Tech City. I'm Anoush Samarodi, and this is New Tech City from WNYC.